Welcome to the City Gospel Movement's podcast. This is a special series sharing the Adaptable Playbook, a framework for success for your evangelism team. Together, we'll explore 11 proven steps that really work for cities across North America who want to raise the temperature of evangelism in their communities. We will hear from practitioners in these cities, humble leaders who have wrestled faithfully with the challenges these steps address. We hope you will leave these conversations encouraged and equipped to own the lostness of your city, one step at a time. To learn more about evangelism teams, the Adaptable Playbook, or what God is doing through collaborative evangelism efforts across North America, visit citygospelmovements.org. Today we will hear from Mark Matlock, Executive Director of Urbana 2025 for InterVarsity Christian Fellowship and a Senior Fellow at Barna. Mark's research provides insights into younger generations, cultivating resilient disciples, and knowing the pulse of your city. As the founder of Wisdom Works, he has helped national and international faith-based organizations adapt to changing times by turning data and research into strategic action. He shares about step three, establishing an adaptable e-team framework. In this step, you will identify the first draft of an e-team leadership structure and governance model. How do you make decisions, and what is the overall goal of the team? Your e-team is most effective when comprised of the right people who offer deep connection to their communities and is structured to maximize each person's level of engagement and role on the team. How will your team function? Every effort needs clarity around its structure, and while the structure can be iterated, a starting place is important. Let's hear what this looks like in practice as we dive into today's conversation between Mark and Chris.
Well, hey, thanks. Welcome back to our Adaptable Playbook podcast. Today is one of the most important conversations, and of course, you could almost say that on every step, but today we're talking about
one of the most important conversations with the least important person.
The most important conversation with the least important person, Mark Matlock.
What an intro. That's awesome.
Yeah. I am excited to have you on board here, Mark. Mark has done a lot of thinking in this space, particularly around data. Mark, you've kind of brought this piece of like, as a senior fellow with Barna, in your own organization with Wisdom Works, it's like, how do we take data and information and make it practical, applicable? And then you add to that sort of your wiring as a person on mission, director of Urbana for 2025, right? I mean, like, you care about the mission of God. And you are interested in seeing this thing go forth and go forth well. And so we find ourselves in a really interesting conversation together today, Mark, and thank you for joining on here, where we say, what is our structure, our infrastructure, our framework have to do with the mission going well? It's kind of a funny question, but it makes me think all the way back to that moment where Moses is getting overwhelmed and his father-in-law Jethro says, hey, what you're doing does not work. Like, you can't do everything. Appoint some people who can make some judgments. Appoint some people who can oversee some people who are making judgments. Appoint some people who can oversee those people. And then you take the really tough cases. And, you're never going to manage a couple million people by yourself. And there's probably some pretty good advice. So today we're talking about this idea. Obviously, this is in the context of a city coming up with a collaborative approach and strategy to reaching their city with the good news, being on mission together in their city. And so what does the framework have to do with that? Sometimes people see this as kind of a dry and dusty, boring topic or something like, do we have to talk about infrastructure? But what makes frameworks so critical to the work of mission? And why do we have to really consider this if we're serious about our work?
I get energized by this subject for a lot of reasons. You know, there is an old Druckerism, I think, is who originated. It says culture eats strategy for breakfast. And the question is then how do we change the culture, right? If it's not a strategic plan or strategic document or strategy, how do you change the culture? And the culture is forged in two things. One, it's your economic logic for how you're funding what it is that you're doing. And the second is in your governance framework and how you are structured as an organization. And in a lot of ways, those are the two things that are the least designed in an organization. They just kind of happen usually initially. Somebody has some initial funding, a donor gives some money to make something happen. Everybody goes, oh, we should be in 501c3. So you do whatever it takes to get that established, but you don't actually think about some of the other questions and what they could lead to. And so it's really important to think through some of these things because they're kind of invisible. And a lot of times when we come into an organization, these are things that are already set and we don't think about the fact that they might need to change. Or if we're starting from scratch with an E-team, like they need to be thought through before we implement. And so, you know, a lot of us in ministry, we do a, you know, kind of a, you know, fire ready aim kind of approach where we take action and then we kind of like backfill on the planning, and it actually works better the other way around. Otherwise we're drawing, you know, bullseyes around where the arrow landed rather than making sure it really hit the target that we wanted to hit. But the other thing that's so important to me is that, you know, we are talking about evangelism in a city. And I love the way Eddie Copeland, you know, framed that as, you know, owning the lostness of the city, like really saying we are responsible for this and feeling the gravity of that. And if we are really owning the lostness of our city, and the E-team framework and governance structure is going to be able to implement and empower that to resolve that so that people can find the gospel and hear the gospel, experience the gospel, then that is going to be a place that the enemy attacks. And one of the invisible places of attack is, I believe, our governance framework. So when it says that the thief comes to steal, to kill and destroy, how does he do that? Well, one of the ways he does it is by us not having a good framework established that is rigorous enough to stand up to that attack, that's impenetrable. You know, the Bible tells us that Satan's like a lion looking for, you know, Christian to devour. You know, what is he going after and attacking? He's looking for our vulnerability. And sometimes that is in our framework, in our structure. Mm-hmm. So this is really important stuff, even though for a lot of us, it's something that we don't want to spend a lot of time thinking about. It actually can really be the thing that determines whether or not you hinge on success or failure. In fact, I've seen and been a part of organizations that are well-funded, like overly funded, but because governance wasn't working well, impact was almost nil. And so it's really important to understand how important good governance frameworks are for our E-teams in order to make them effective.
Yeah, really, really well said. I mean, I think often we think of that steal, kill, and destroy is like, hey, the leader's going to have a moral failure,
yes,
or something like that. And of course, that can be super destructive. But that idea of your structure and your framework of how you're going to function, and is that serving the ultimate end? Pull us into that a little bit, Mark. Like as you know, a lot of these E-teams, a lot of these collaborative efforts are a couple of key leaders in a city who start, hey, why don't we just get together? We'll kind of pray about this. We'll kind of engage that. We don't need a big structure. We don't need a big framework or something like that. What does that framework kind of look like? What's the most important thing if you're going to set up something like that? What are some of the key questions a leader should be asking to make sure that this framework actually serves them? Because I think you, and maybe speak to this as well, there's also that situation, right, where it's like, man, we're serving the structure and it's like crushing us. Like, this giant framework is like, it's actually preventing us from doing mission. But isn't that kind of the same thing, like setting up a framework that actually serves the mission? Speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, I think there are, you know, I basically, when I'm working with different clients or cities that are trying to implement this for the first time or figure things out, I usually lead them through six questions.
Okay.
That are designed to kind of help them get at the heart of this. Because we gravitate toward models really quickly before we actually take a moment to maybe make sure that we've answered the questions right, so we know what it is that we're trying to do, right? So like the first question is just like, what are our outcomes? What are we trying to achieve?
Right.
It is amazing to me how many people have a hard time or differing answers to that question. So when you sit around a room and you have everybody write on a, you know, a little post-it, you know, what is the outcome of what our E-team is trying to accomplish? You may find that you have as many different answers as you have people around the table, or the people have a really hard time figuring out what that outcome is. And so a lot of times I like to play a little game with people. It's called tweet my hashtag. And this is, that's what I call it. And the idea is that assuming that your organization or your E-team is an incredible success, what has changed for the better? And that's a better responding to that question is actually better than saying, what are our outcomes or what's our mission statement? You know, but boy, if this E-team works, what in our city has changed for the better?
Well said. Yeah.
And if you can answer that question and nail that and agree as a group around it, that is going to do so much to help build your framework for what your E-team is shooting for. Because it's, you know, if, and the more specific you can be about it, you know, it's better to do that. You know, we want to have 85% of the, you know, churches in our community participating in the E-team, or we want to train X number of people, or, you know, we're going to see the growth of Christianity, practicing Christians increase by 10% or whatever, you know, knowing something that happens there, you know, and it can be a big, hairy, audacious goal too. It doesn't have to be something that's achievable. It could be, we want every person in our city to hear the gospel. That's a big, hairy, audacious goal, but that's not something that's inconceivable, right? And that means you're going to dream, dreams, and structure your organization differently because you have a big outcome. So I think that's
and that's interesting, because it's like to your point, if the word evangelism can mean a lot of things to a lot of people, and reaching the lost can mean a lot of things to a lot of people, and so you could be functioning together with different ideas of what the scorecard is, essentially, right? Like what counts. And I think we're nailing it. And you're like, these guys are hopeless because we have completely unstated agreement. And I love our friend Jed in Omaha, because he talks about when you listen to everybody's vision, you actually collect the visions. And now you know the collective vision. Like, here's the thing that we're all actually kind of overlapping on. Here's the thing that we can actually collaborate around, because it's the thing that we kind of all agree really needs to happen. And so you got to find that first, right? Otherwise you don't know what you're building your structure around. What's the next question, Mark? You've teased us now with your six questions. So you're going to have to,
Now I'm going to have to finish it. Yeah. Give them all away. So the next one is really simple, but how are we funded?
Yeah. Right.
And believe it or not, there's not that many options for funding. And most of us in the nonprofit space kind of would answer D, all of the above, right?
Right.
You know, whatever path there is to funding, we want to take it. But the reality is really thinking through how are we going to fund, how does this get funded? I have found that when we limit our channels of funding, we actually have better options for getting the funding. And I think this is really common with E-teams. Is you have a sponsoring organization. So maybe you have a church or a nonprofit in the community that says, hey, we're going to absorb the financial costs. We have enough, you know, wiggle in our budget that we could actually cover the minimal costs of this. However, if it's something that's very expensive, not just meeting together as a group and running some programs, well, then you might need to look at how are we going to raise some funds. I even think sometimes it's important to say, how do we want to be funded, even before you figure out how much do we need? And that question can change over time, but I think even sitting down and asking that question on the front end can really help hammer out some expectations. Because all that these questions do when you're forming an E-team is you're helping everybody get on the same page. And people are always holding expectations inside of them that until verbalized or articulated, you know, everybody's assuming things. And that's where fracturing happens. That's where discord happens. Right. People get upset and frustrated with each other because we didn't talk about this. all of a sudden, right, it's like, and hey, we said we'd do this, but we just meant for like a couple of meetings. We didn't know like for 5 years, you know.
And money, you know, and money has a funny way of causing division. Money has a funny way of causing distrust and breaking what Mark did. What? You know what I mean? Like, and so those kinds of things, to be really clear and upfront about those, and having the conversation about them are pretty critical for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tangibly speaking, as we think through some of these other key questions, Mark, fly us through those, because I think if we know some of the right questions to ask, right, like you're going to have to wrestle each of these questions to the ground. Like, there's not like an answer to the how are we funded question. Different groups are going to have to figure out how to do that together. And it's your agreement on it that makes it work. Not just that you have an answer, but it's your agreement on the answer that actually works, right?
And helps you ensure success, right? Because getting alignment on the front end on some of these things, rather than figuring it out as you're building the plane, you know, is always better. But what's great is we're not trying to tell people this is how you do it, because there may be different, you know, resources available or different outcomes in different cities that require thinking differently about their framework. And so you want that framework to be flexible.
And I think one of the things that we're hoping to do in terms of with Palau is like, we're trying to play a little bit of that connector role as people think through their framework. Let's help you meet some others who are using that approach. And, you know, maybe they'll dissuade you from using it, or maybe they'll confirm that that's the right way to roll. But that's definitely something we're hoping to help do. And, you know, that's kind of the whole goal of this podcast, right? Is it's like, what are the questions that you could be asking that will help you with that big vision of bearing witness to the good news of Christ, so that people can have hope, right, in your city, and that so they can find Jesus. And so these questions are really important things to wrestle through. And what I love about this step, Mark, and your help with us, I mean, Mark worked with our team to really come up with, we called it building an E-team framework. It's in the podcast notes. There'll be a link to it. You can actually download this and check it out. But as we're thinking through these pieces, it's like, these are really, really critical conversations to be had. Fly us through those other four so people can hear them.
Yeah. So the third one is, how are we related? So,
okay.
Like, what is this that we're building here as an E-team? Some people, like, the E-team is an organization in and of itself. So it's its own 501c3. So it's got a legal structure to it. For some,
more formalized,
like, for some, it's just like, you know, this is an alliance, and we're going to agree to a covenant with one another that this is our outcomes, you know, for the city or whatever. But that changes things, because there you don't need any legal structure. You're just saying, hey, we're an alliance together. Are we going to be a backbone organization where we serve the collective impact model, so to speak? That's for another conversation, but what the collective impact model is. But a backbone organization could be an organization that only exists to support the network in the city, for the E-team in the city. So that's another way that people could, you know, imagine this being established. But that's really important, because sometimes you have somebody who initiates this. You want to know, are you thinking you're going to be the leader of this, or were you just trying to get it started? Because there are some people I've seen start and initiate E-teams that are like, oh, I don't want to run it. I just have a heart for it. Yeah. I got the leaders together and got them going, but I'm not looking for a job, right? So articulating that, how are we related to one another, is really important. I think that for E-teams too, informal networks are great, where it's like, we're an alliance together, where we're going to own this, and we're going to covenant together to walk with each other through it, but we're not forming anything that's got to have a bank account or, you know, its own, you know, maybe there's a website or something, but you may not even want that. You may want it to be something that's completely invisible in the city as well. So,
Mark, this is kind of like a DTR, right? Define the relationship, kind of a conversation. It's like, hey, let's just kind of name what we're doing here. So that we can function well together. Perfect. Yeah.
So the next thing then would be like, what is our legal structure? That's the fourth question. So once you know how we're related, then that says, okay, if there's fiduciary responsibilities, we might need a legal structure around that. Then the fifth question is, how are decisions made? Real easy to just assume that we all think we're going to make decisions the same way. The founding fathers of the United States, in drafting the Constitution, this is an incredibly resilient document, a lot of thinking, but boy, you read through like the Federalist Papers and the letters written back and forth. I mean, they were arguing, fighting, you know, over governance, you know, over, well, they're, you know, the king should, the president should only have this much power, too much, and that looks like a king, and all that. They were really struggling with this stuff, trying to build something that was really resilient that would last. So these are really important things, you know, is it consensus-based decision-making? Is it majority vote? Is there a hierarchical decision-making process where maybe feedback's gotten from the group, but one person ultimately makes the call? Is distributed leadership? How are you going to do that? There aren't as many options as people think there are for how decisions are made, but they do. You do have to figure out how you're going to do that and what that looks like. And then the last, yeah, go ahead.
Well, real quick on that one. That's one of those ones too, where like if you don't name it, then the loud person will probably make all the decisions, or the, you know, or the, you know, it's like, hey, well then, should we use our process and make a decision on this conversation? As opposed to, did we make a decision? Was something done here? Did we agree to go do something? So that process is really clarifying.
Oh, it's so important. This is where power lies, is in this decision, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And the most critical thing that any team's going to be doing is making decisions for how we're going to address the lostness of our city. So this is really powerful moment for the enemy to come in and attack. And what often happens with alliances is there's like this secret meeting that happens after the meeting, you know, and this is what happens if this isn't determined. Right. And so a group meets afterwards and kind of goes, okay, I didn't like that. Do you like, okay, let's do that. And you go, oh, the power is concentrated now in these three or four relationships. Better to call that out on the front end, because there's always going to be problems. We're talking about human beings, right? Even the disciples argued and fought against each other. And, you know, it's just going to happen. But having some structure or framework can ease that and can help you work through it by clarifying those expectations.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, Mark, what's the last question? What's the final one here?
And the last one is just simply, how do we behave?
Okay.
And these are kind of our values in action, right? So this might be our, you know, what are our core doctrinal beliefs? What are our, you know, how do we show up in the city? I think that's really important, because sometimes when we do these cooperative alliances like this, it's better for, like, do we want people to know the alliance, or do we just want people to see the fruit of what's happening in our individual efforts? And so knowing how we want to show up can be really important as well. Sometimes having some level of just, you know, invisibility, we always want to be transparent, but, right, but not creating a separate identity can sometimes be a more effective approach.
No, that's really good. I think that, you know, one thing, somebody's listening to this might be like, oh my goodness, we just have a couple people. We're just praying over the city right now. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's a framework. We're praying over the city. That's what we're doing. We're not trying to do all this other stuff. We're not trying to raise $1 million. We're not trying to launch a website. Like, you, that is a decision that should be clarified and named. When I think of this framework conversation, I know we talked about this a while back, Mark, but our family, we decided to plant some tomatoes, and we have this, you know, those like wire baskets that go over the tomato plant so it can grow up. And so we had a couple of those, but we had like five tomato plants. And so we put in the nice baskets on the two bigger ones. And it was like, what are we going to do with these others? So we just grabbed like a couple sticks and jammed them in the ground. And I often think of that when we think of the framework. It's like, It could be as simple as a tomato stick, like shove a stick in the ground, use a piece of string to tie the thing so it can grow and flourish. But if you don't do something in the framework space, as soon as that fruit starts to come, the thing's going to fall over, it's going to snap, it's going to break. You do have to have that infrastructure and piece in place. And when it's in place, things can flourish, things can move, things can grow. The collaborative effort to reach your city is not about your infrastructure, but it's going to become about your infrastructure if you don't actually give it the attention it needs to be in the role that it needs to be in, which is to serve the mission, right?
I think you know, a lot of times we go, well, we can't make people come to Christ. We can't, and that's true, right? That's the work of the Holy Spirit. But what I have found in my 35 some years of ministry is that if there is infrastructure available and ready that can handle capacity, God will bring capacity. And that is why I think this framework is so important. If you have people trained to respond to people, if you have churches that are ready to receive people that hear the gospel, and let's face it, there are a lot of churches that aren't ready to receive a harvest. The church can't handle the needs of those people coming in from a discipleship standpoint. So it's no wonder that maybe we don't see the harvest because the infrastructure isn't there. And to me, that's what an E-team is doing, is providing that infrastructure across the city to be able to allow for a harvest, to not destroy the church of the city, but to actually allow it to grow. And so that's why these framework things are so important. Just like your tomato analogy, they help us support the fruit. And, you know, and there's some evidence even in gardening and things like that, that the plant will only allow the fruit to kind of like go to a develop that it won't destroy itself. And so if it has the ability and the structure to, you know, to stand, you'll actually bear larger, more robust fruit as well.
Yeah, that's a beautiful metaphor. I think I think that's a great way to articulate how can you bring attention and focus to spreading the good news in your city. But that really is kind of an infrastructure question. It is a framework question. How can you bring a framework around this to your city? So, Mark, these questions are super helpful. And even as we're going through them, I'm kind of going, man, with our group here in Seattle, we should probably go through these. What should someone do with all this? Like, when you walk away from this, do this.
The best thing is just to have a meeting where you walk through all six questions as a group and try to answer them. Use the tool that we've provided. That's a great tool that has some framing around that you can follow and use. But it might take you several weeks of meetings to do that, an hour at a time. And sometimes it's good to have some time to sleep and think about it in between and kick it around. But make sure that over the course of a month or two, you're able to answer all those questions and everybody's aligned to them. It makes it real easy for other people to join too when you can answer those questions.
Yeah, and you're also sort of sharing the wisdom and the knowledge. It's like we all know what we're doing, right? So now we're all advocates of what we're doing. We're all champions of this work. Last question for you, Mark. Kind of last final words of wisdom. We've talked about different questions that could be asked to kind of think through this framework. Again, I'll just remind people, check out the Building an E-Team Framework resource that Mark kind of helped us develop. But you also just wrote a book, Faith for the Curious.
Yeah.
You've done some information research, some strategy around with Barna and David Kinnaman specifically around this moment we're in evangelistically. Mm-hmm. What are some, maybe some final words of wisdom with your research in mind, with your infrastructure mind, that you could share to encourage our E-teams?
Well, we are seeing just, you know, a spiritually open moment. Doesn't mean they're open to Christianity specifically, but people are spiritually open. And the way I like to describe it is that people are looking for an upgrade. They are, they're experiencing something good in their life and they want more of it. And they believe that spirituality might be the path to get more of that. So it might be a sense of justice. It might be intimacy. It might be creativity. It might be compassion or mercy. It might be just connectedness. Whatever that thing is, that is the image of God in them that is awake and alive, and it's trying to get bigger, but the restriction of living in a fallen sin and being fallen people is keeping us from experiencing all of that. So this gives us a great, like, common ground space to connect with people. Oh, you're creative. I'm creative. Oh, you long for intimacy and, you know, you want to be a good parent or a good spouse. Me too. Here's how Jesus helps me do that, by restoring what was broken that you're experiencing a little of. The way I like to think of it is, like, you know, we're all little mirrors reflecting God's glory, his image. Sin obviously shattered that mirror into little pieces and fragments. So people are walking around with the little fragments, and with the American culture and just our society, you know, we're not waking up every day going, can I get clean water? Can I, you know, most of us have a lot of our basic needs met. A lot of our needs for safety and security are met. Not everybody, but for a lot of us, it's better than almost anywhere else in the world. This gives us time to connect with these things in us, these image of God pieces that are in us that are broken. So I'm always listening as I'm talking to people that aren't in the church. What is that piece of God, the image of God in them that's trying to get bigger? And how do I connect with them on that? And then how do I help lead them to an understanding of how Jesus can help them experience more of that? Because it's not going to be through yoga or mindfulness or all those things will help, but it's not going to be the breakthrough that a relationship with Jesus Christ can bring when he restores them spiritually and gives them then the power of the Holy Spirit in them to live into these things even more so. So that's kind of what we see happening right now. There's less than 10% of the U.S. population believes that the physical world is all there is. So the majority of people on our planet believe there is more out there, and there's about 64% of the unchurched that we would consider to be spiritually curious. So they're looking for solutions spiritually for the things that they're wanting to experience more of in their life. So we have a great moment right now. This is a great time for E-teams to be established. And by the way, on this framework stuff too, just a word of caution, don't overdo it on this stuff. You're going to grow into it, but making sure you just answer the questions can really help. You can spend so much time, you know, nobody looks at blueprints. They look at buildings. And so the blueprint is the path to the building. The framework is the path to the E-team. We don't want to spend so much time on the framework that we miss out on actually building the building and getting that accomplished. But a solid set of blueprints will help us build a bigger building that will last and serve the needs of the community better. So just want to give
one. Yeah, I love that. I think it was Churchill who said, we shape our buildings and afterwards our buildings shape us.
Shape us, right? Yes.
And I think there's just a lot of wisdom in that. Well, Mark, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us, thinking through this critical piece, helping us think through also this critical moment we're in. And look, this is just a beautiful time to be offering hope to people who are actually looking for it. And so what an amazing thing. Mark, I'm wondering if you could maybe just close in a word of prayer over those who are joining us on this, and just pray for that moment and for this key piece of infrastructure. So thank you.
Yeah. And I would also just encourage everybody, as you do figure out what your governance frameworks are and you answer these questions, share that with us at Palau, because we really want to know, like, what's working, because it may be that there's only maybe one or two real structures that really allow E-teams to fly. We just don't know yet. And so we're wanting to, like, keep that open, but that might help us deploy more faster and better. So yeah, be in conversation with us about what happens. Yeah. Let me pray. Dear Lord, I thank you for the Palau Association, Lord, and just for the way that for so many years you have used them to put your gospel forward in the culture. And Lord, I thank you that they have adapted and that they have kind of watched the times to see how they can leverage their wisdom and resources and experiences more fully to just activate, Lord, the sharing of the gospel in cities all across the world. Lord, I pray for everybody listening to this podcast that's trying to figure out how to get this E-team going. Lord, would you just bless them, protect them from the enemy, and Lord, help them to work through these questions. Give them just supernatural wisdom and guidance that only comes from you as they put these things together so that they can really flourish and that they can bear the fruit, Lord, that you've called them to bear. In your name we pray, in the name of Jesus. Amen.
What an encouraging conversation. To learn more about the resources shared in this podcast, including the E-Team Framework document with all the questions Mark shared today, or to download the Adaptable Playbook, check out citygospelmovements.org. Join us next time for a conversation with two city leaders with deep insight on step 4, determining a communication strategy.